Today, April 8th, is National Equal Pay Day. It marks how far into 2014 women had to work to earn the same amount of money men made in 2013, if I understand the calculations correctly. In Wisconsin, women only make about 78 cents for every dollar a man makes.
Laura Dresser is with us. She's the Associate Director for the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, or COWS. Laura, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
So this is 2014. Why is there still such a sizable wage gap for women?
The wage gap has been a long-standing issue in the American labor market, probably in the global labor market. It relates to a number of factors, including outright discrimination, differences in choices, the kind of careers people choose, different pressures from family life that women face. There are a lot of reasons for a wage gap, but it remains very slow to close, and sometimes seems only to close when men's wages fall.
And what happens to the wage gap when we look at minority women?
Well, then if you look at the wage gap from a minority woman to a white male, the wage gap grows substantially. Latinas in the state make about 55 cents for every dollar white men make, and African-American women in the state about 63 cents compared to that 78 cents that was mentioned earlier, that is the white women's wage gap.
Yeah. So one of the reasons people have used to explain the wage gap has been that men are more educated. They get more higher degrees than women do. Is that even true anymore?
That's actually not true for the younger cohorts coming into the labor market. That is true in the past. But it's true also that for those younger cohorts coming in, even if you look at people in exactly the same major at the exactly as they enter with a 4-year college degree, the women face a wage gap from day one of about 5%, not 22%. Then if you look further down the road into their careers, about 12%. So over time, the wage gap grows, even for the people with the same education. So education isn't the whole answer. And a lot of that source on the wage gap has really closed because of the access of to really professional occupations that women didn't have a generation ago, lawyers, doctors, et cetera. Some of the high end has moved more.
So is it not profession-based then? If you're working in these higher paying jobs, then you're not quite as subject to the what we know about the wage gap. And if you're working a lower paying job, you're more vulnerable?
Well, I think women are vulnerable across the board to the wage gap and face different pressures. At the high end, you know, the stress of family and the need to take care of kids and kind of expectations around unstoppable schedules can be quite a problem and a glass ceiling. But then further down, women face other kinds of pressures, that their ability to, you know, take care of family life is sometimes, you know, even asking for a shift off in order to go to a parent-teacher conference can lead to losing your job. So further down in the labor market, it can be much more treacherous.
What about sheer numbers of hours worked? Does that factor into this at all? Do men simply work more hours than women?
Well, these wage gaps that we were talking about were annual full-time worker wage gaps. So we correct for the, you know, that these data take care of that question of hours. It's true that women more often work part-time because of those family pressures and other reasons. And it's true that there are lower hours, but these gaps are not about the hours. The gaps exist even considering hours differences.
Now, what about as people age and saving for retirement? We hear a lot about that and how people aren't saving enough. How does the wage gap affect women in their later years in life and their prospects for retirement?
Well, you know, a wage gap in a year, you know, 22% may seem, well, pretty significant because, of course, you'd show up for a sale that had that much of a reduction. But 78 cents versus a dollar, maybe you don't think that's so much. But over the course of a 35-year working career, it's a difference in earnings of $1.2 million.
Wow.
Of 35 workers, that's the difference between a college graduate's wage, male and female wage. And so when you're saving on that money for retirement, you know, that $1.2 million difference over the course of your life,
the interest doesn't add up quite as nicely.
Yeah, it makes a giant difference.
Well, let's zero in on Wisconsin now. How does Wisconsin look?
You know, Wisconsin, I think for a while was really coming up in terms of narrowing the gap. We saw some years when Wisconsin moved closer to the national number. We'd been behind it a little. Lately, Wisconsin's gap has sort of steadied out. And I think we saw that motion actually during the recession, mostly because of bad news for men. which is a different kind of equity. You know, it's not as good news.
Well, how does that play into this? I have seen that in terms of jobs lost in the economy, women are gaining those jobs back faster than men are. So what does that do to the mathematics of the wage gap?
Yeah, some people call this the man session because of the way it hit construction and manufacturing, especially early on. And because some of the strongest growth was coming in traditionally female sectors, education, healthcare, and hospitality. And so one thing that happens, you know, there's a couple ways the math can work out. But one thing is that as the demand in men's sectors comes down and men's wages comes down, you end up having the wage gap close, even if women's wages are stagnant. And so, you know, that's a kind of equity, but it's not quite as good feeling as when women's wages are moving up to men's.
Well, so speaking of good feeling, what would you like to see happen to close the wage gap?
Well, I think there's a lot of fronts to think about. You know, I think it's interesting today, President Obama mentioned some policy action at the executive order level that will allow people to ask about wages. And one of the things that's very clear is that women just don't, that knowledge in any labor market, knowledge of what other people are earning is what gives you power to make a negotiation. And women far too often don't have that knowledge that and in fact, not the ability to ask. And so partly this is just about getting more information out there. I think that matters a lot. I think changing expectations of kids and what's possible continues to matter. Having girls understand that math and science is possible, you know, all that kind of work that we have done, I think matters a lot. But I think it also matters a lot to pay attention to the family constraints that that everyone faces. Women disproportionately end up responding to those, whether that's kids or parents, sickness in the family, and that all impacts their ability to do their jobs. So the more that we have a kind of social surround on family work balance, the more that actually disproportionately helps women, but it helps us all because it's about really making, you know, work more amenable to families and making women more able to respond to both.
Yeah, that's an argument that we've been hearing a lot from prominent feminists, including former Vermont Governor Madeline Cunin, who says that is the next front of feminism, is dealing with the family, the whole family, because it does disproportionately affect women. So what kinds of policies do you think would be a good thing to help affect this?
You know, there's a couple really important policies. The United States is one of the only countries in the world that does not provide paid family leave. So we got when a new child or adopted or is born into a house, maternal and paternal leave is not paid. You have the right to ask for it, but you don't have the right to be paid for that. There are insurance ways of developing programs like unemployment insurance that workers pay in, and then when they have a kid, they can, you know, take the time they need, or when their parents are sick or they're dealing with serious family health issues, they can take the time and have some income flow, because so often the ability to ask for the time off isn't the question. The ability to afford the time off is the question, and this just allows workers. So that's one policy that matters. Another that matters especially to low-wage workers is to have earned sick leave, so that you can be sick or you can be home with your child who's sick and still get your income from your job. Again, this is a policy that is pretty ubiquitous in the world, that, you know, part of what a job comes with is some paid sick leave. But there's only recently been policy innovation on that front in the U.S.
Well, we're talking to Laura Dresser, Associate Director for COWS, about today, which is National Equal Pay Day.
And we want to hear from you. What do you think of the state of gender inequality in the American workplace, in the Wisconsin workplace? So do you see a wage gap where you work, or are things more equal, or do you not know because you don't know what anybody's getting paid? What would you like to see Wisconsin, the federal government, the corporate world do to address the wage gap? This is Central Time. I'm Rob Barrett.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. We're picking up our discussion about Equal Pay Day with Laura Dresser, Associate Director for COWS, or the Center on Wisconsin Strategy.
And we want to hear from you. What do you think about the wage gap between men and women? Do you see this maybe as a problem in your workplace, or are things pretty equal there? What do you think Wisconsin or the federal government or the corporate world should do to address the wage gap, if anything? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234 or email talk@WPR.org.
And we'll go to the phones now. We've got Nick joining us in Green Bay. Hi, Nick.
I got two comments. Actually, the first one is, since your last story ran about Windows XP, it kind of kicked me in the butt to upgrade my computer.
Good. Glad we're helping.
And then the other comment is, my daughter and I are really into science. We're sitting on the couch watching something on the Discovery Channel or something because we really love science. And I looked at her and I said, so what do you want to do when you grow up? I said, would you like to be a scientist? And she's like, well, I want to, but I just can't be a scientist. I was like, why? She's like, because I'm a girl. I said, are you serious? I said, anybody can be a scientist. And she's just shocked by the idea that she could be a scientist. She's like, it's only for boys. I'm like, no. I said, you can do whatever you want when you grow up. I said, you could be a scientist, which, and it just really blew me away that she said it was only for boys.
Yeah, I'm glad you had that conversation. How old is your daughter?
She's five.
She's five. Oh, well, she's pretty young yet, but that's an interesting point. Well, let's get our guest, Laura, on this. What about encouraging women from ages five and younger and older to go into the STEM professions?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, it's clear that a lot of impressions about what's possible are formed when you're five. And of course, one of the things that seems possible is being a princess. So, you know that that's going to go away. Some of this isn't completely real, but it is really important, I think. Even today, I think we hope or imagine that a girl's sense of possibility is as big as the world. But I think a lot of times there are a lot of social messages that say it's not, whether it's the cast of The Big Bang Theory, which creates a kind of equivalence between geekiness and guyness, and then or whether it's, in the way that teachers respond to kids in class. But I think it's really important to just consistently be saying that message and holding up the examples of folks who don't look like what we think are scientists. Even today, that really matters. That sense of expectation and possibility is part of the answer.
And are those higher paying professions?
Yeah. I mean, consistently, the things that girls imagine or traditionally move into are lower paid, whether that's the traditional women's list of occupations is nursing, clerical work, social work, and teaching. And that list is a list that is paid consistently less for a college degree than equivalents that men are more dominated by males. And so, it's important to kind of change that set of expectations. It's changed a lot, but as this story from Green Bay points out, it still needs to keep being taught.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for that call, Nick, and good luck to your budding scientists. And we'll go next to Daniel joining us from Milwaukee. Hi there.
Hello. Hi, Veronica. Big fan of your show.
Thank you.
And Laura, I really enjoyed your comments and commentary so far. Appreciate the work you're doing to bring this issue to light.
Thanks.
I just wanted to say I think there are three immediate things that we can do in the state of Wisconsin to both make the work home balance more sustainable and better for women, and also to decrease the wage disparity. One is to pass a bill to reduce discrimination based on family status, a similar bill to reduce discrimination based on pregnancy, and to allow pregnant women to, a lot of times in the workplace, they don't get to sit down or even just get a glass of water. And finally, we need to make laws in the state come back on the books that create equal pay for equal work, which I read somewhere is estimated to cost the state about $8 billion a year, the whole economy. So it's an issue that affects everybody and something that, we can't finish it all in one day, but we can take steps in the right direction. So thank you.
All right. Well, thank you so much and appreciate you calling. And what do you think about that?
That's a nice list of state policies that the legislature is considering. And I think it's, those are all great things. I don't know that they'll come out the other side of the legislative process, but it's good that they're at the start of that equal pay for equal work, especially. But all of them, the family status, important, critical as well. One other thing I would put on the list too is the minimum wage. 60% of workers who toil at the bottom of the labor market at the minimum wage are women. So when you raise the minimum wage, you actually close the wage gap. And that's another policy that is in consideration up at the Capitol by the folks there. So that's another opportunity.
All right. Great. Appreciate that call. And we'll move next to Patrick joining us in La Crosse. Hi, Patrick.
Hi there. I've enjoyed your show today. Thank you.
Thank you. And what do you think about the wage
question.
Gap?
Oh, what I think about it? Well, actually, I have a quick question. Mm-hmm. So my question is, regarding the wage disparity between men and women, are women facing difficulty finding higher-paying positions and promotions that men might get, or are they being simply paid less for the same work?
I think the answer is just is both. You know, there's some of both of those things matter. So sometimes it is connections and information or where, you know, the locker room conversation that they're not included in or the kind of sense of what the opportunities for promotion are that happen in some space that they're not included in. But also, you know, it is true that you can find women in the exact same jobs and paid less for the exact same job. So I think both things are going on in that net number.
Okay, thank you so much, Patrick, for the call. And Laura, how would you say overall the wage gap affects Wisconsin's economy on the whole?
Well, I think, you know, there's a couple different ways to measure it. And Daniel's call earlier indicated one of them is that, you know, if women earned what men earned, that would be a lot of money in family budgets. And if you close that wage gap, and this is one reason that I think sometimes this is painted as a women's issue, and clearly it matters most to women and their paychecks. But in fact, women's money, women's earnings is part of family income. And if you close that gap, you actually increase family earnings. And it's a very significant increase to family earnings. I've seen the number, but I don't have it at the top of my head right now, the total number, some millions, many millions for the state economy.
And if you're talking about affecting the family budget overall, would closing the wage gap also then improve rates of, for instance, child poverty, child hunger, things like that?
Yeah, that for sure. If women's wages were higher, women, you know, 40% of children are in families headed by single women. Those women's wages, you know, then are the sole support and one of the principal reasons we have the problem with child poverty in this nation and state that we do. Better earnings for those women means less poverty for those kids.
And are you optimistic that the wage gap will close, at least tighten, maybe over the next several years?
Well, you know, I think the most positive story over the last generation is really the story of college-educated professional women. That my story, relative to my mother's story, for example, is, you know, that I have had a lot more opportunity, both in terms of the education I achieved and the things I could do with it. I think that's true of this generation relative to the previous one, and one of the reasons we've seen the gap close. That feels like that's pretty much stabled, sort of gotten as close as it's going to get. And I think looking forward, we really have to look, I think, much more consistently to the bottom of the labor market and to equalizing from the bottom to the top, regardless of gender, and pulling up the bottom because that does help a lot of women, and thinking more about this family balance issues. Those are the places where it will really matter in terms of closing the gender gap, but making life more livable for people, especially at the bottom of the U.S. and Wisconsin labor markets.
All right. Well, let's see if we can get in one more call here and take Lynn, who is joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Veronica. It is my opinion that in order to close the disparities in all employment, that people ought to re-educate themselves on the importance, the history and the importance of unions. It was the tragedies in the garment workers district that befell mostly women that led to the International Garment Workers Union. And union rights, they're for all workers across the board. And people have become terrified of the power of unions. But union rights are civil rights. They work across, unions work across the board for workers. And you've got health insurance, an 8-day workday, vacations, all of those, even as far as the ability to access education, thank the unions for that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for calling us up, Lynn, sharing your thoughts with us. And obviously a hot-button issue here in Wisconsin is cows have a position about the wage gap in unions.
Well, I think, you know, the research has a position about wage gap in unions, and that is that union work sites have done some of the best work on equal pay for comparable work, for considering how you begin to close the gaps, you know, across the public sector in Washington State, for example. It was unions who really drove an effort that that whittled away some of that wage gap between even different sorts of jobs. And it's great to have a union for equal pay for equal work and for that knowledge of what people are getting paid. So some of those basic negotiating issues that can hurt women are solved in a union worksite.
Laura, thank you so much for coming by today. Appreciate it.
My pleasure to be here.
That was Laura Dresser, Associate Director for the Center on Wisconsin Strategy, otherwise known as COWS. She was here to talk with us about National Equal Pay Day.